Right, you're welcome back to the show. Good morning. If you're after joining us again, thanks to Brendan and Michael for their contribution in the first hour. Thank you for your comments. We'll get to those in a moment. But of course, Christmas is in the air and we've teamed up with Cadbury to celebrate the return of Cadbury Secret Santa. So for your chance to win a €250 one for all voucher, all with thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa. If you want, you can enter this competition right now. Okay, so what we're inviting you to do, as we have all week, is we've invited you to nominate someone in your life who deserves a special treat. You could send them a free bar of chocolate if you spot one of the Cadbury Secret Santa posters around the country, or you can search Cadbury Secret Santa to find out more. But if you want to nominate someone again today, please feel free to tell us about them, why they're so important to you. And one of you out there will win a €250 one for all voucher. It's all with thanks to Cadbury Secret Santa. And as I say, if you'd like to send a free chocolate bar to someone special, then look out for the special Cadbury Secret Santa posters around the county. You'll search Cadbury Secret Santa to find out more. It's a free service on selected products while stocks last until December 24th. So who is important in your life and why would they deserve a Secret Santa bar from Cadbury? The winning entry gets a €250 one for all voucher. You use our free text line, of course, 086 60 25,000. It's free to WhatsApp, free for most of you to text, but check, of course. 086 60 25,000. That's the regular text number. You just text it all the time. Send your entries into that number. We'll reveal a little later on who is the winner of that €250 one for all voucher. Now, also, too, starting from Monday and for 10 days, we have the opportunity for you to share in €10,000. If you enter our Christmas card draw, you can go onto our website and buy a ticket. The car's worth over €30,000. It's an absolute beauty. That's the star prize, right? That's going to be given away to one of you just before Christmas. It's €10 for one ticket, €50 for six tickets, €80 for 10 tickets. Now, if you get your tickets before Monday, from Monday, we're going to be ringing a caller, two callers a day. I'll explain how it works in a moment. But we're going to be ringing someone every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, and the same days the following week. And we have €1,000 to give away a day, potentially. Now, we have a €10,000 prize total to give away, and I'll explain why I have to make that caveat there. So we'll ring, if you enter the competition, by the way, and if you enter it now, you're in all 11 draws, and I'll tell you how you enter it. But I'll tell you how the system works. So on two shows throughout the course of, or dependent, we'll start off with one show from Monday onwards, right? So we'll ring someone up. They've got five rings-ish to answer. If they answer, a very simple question will be asked. They win €1,000. Now, if they can't answer for one reason or another, a little later in the day, we'll try and ring another person. And if they answer, they win the €1,000. But if they don't answer, and this becomes unlikely now, that €1,000 rolls on to the Tuesday. And that means our first call of the day will be for €2,000. If it goes on that call, there's no second call. Do you get me? So we've a total of 10 grand to give away over 10 days. Theoretically, just to explain it, one person could answer on the 10th day and win 10 grand, but it's not going to work like that, okay? Because you're all very good at answering your phones. So if you want to be in with a chance of winning those 11 prizes, the car and the 10,000 cash total, then you need to buy your tickets today. You go online, you can do it at highlandradio.com. It's safe and perfectly secure. That being said, some of you may wish to come into station here, and we can sort you out here in station as well. In the station, the Mountaintop Letterkenny, if you want to come in with your cash, that's no problem. And we can also help if you want to give us a call, 07491 25,000. We really want just everyone who wants to be involved in it to be included in it. And I'm saying this personally, of course, it is for fun, but please don't obviously do it if you can't afford it. You have to have the spare money to be able to get involved and do it because it is that time of year as well. But anyway, you can buy the tickets, give them out to friends and family if you wish. So you can buy the €80 for 10 tickets, give one to every member of your family and friends, and they're all in the draw. You're all in the draw for the €10,000 total in cash given out over 10 days or the car itself. Okay, so that's that said. We're ready to take your calls. We're ready to deal with the online if you are in the mood to get involved today. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Now, Father Brian Darcy will be signing his new book, The Best of Brian, in Derry this morning and in Letterkenny this afternoon. And Father Brian Darcy has been good enough to speak to us this morning. Father Darcy, how are you? How are you keeping?
I'm great, Greg, and I enjoyed your very solid conversation there on the problems of immigration, etc. Very, very enlightening and very good. So it was lovely to hear that.
Yeah, and it is good to talk, isn't it, Father? I mean, we have to tease these things through. We can't lose the art of conversation.
No, I think debate and friendliness and dialogue is the only way. I mean, I think it was Mandela used to say that there's no point, you'll never win your enemies over by talking to your friends. You have to talk to your enemies and make them your friends.
In your book, The Best of Brian, one of the issues or one of the topics that you talk about is forgiveness. And it's kind of interesting because I think it kind of does talk to our previous conversation about our humanity and how we treat each other. And I think an important part of us, and I suppose in how we interact with each other, is forgiveness.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Greg. I want to say, I mean, I'm still an active priest and we'll be hearing confessions 4 and 5 hours a day. Every week, you know, we still have that. And it's really lovely for people to come in and have a chat, not the old kind of judicial system that we used to have, but to come in, people are mad to have people who they can have a confidential chat about their own life and being able to forgive maybe the family or friends that they're fighting with or their workmates. But even more importantly, and we always get round to this in a conversation, all forgiveness starts with yourself, with oneself. If I cannot forgive myself, I'm not likely to be able to forgive anybody else. And we need to be understand ourselves. None of us is perfect. We all will make mistakes. But nothing is a mistake if you learn from it. It's the art of making positive mistakes in your life so that you become a mature, better, wiser person because of that. And to be able to forgive yourself for being human. Sometimes we need to forgive God because we have to shout it. God, we think of when we dealt a bad hand. A lot of people at the moment will say to me, how can there be a God when what's happening in the Middle East is happening, or what's happening in the Ukraine is happening, or what's happening in the people who have to come to Ireland to find a home and leave everything behind them? And the bottom line is, yes, you'd have to figure out with God how that happens. But I think some of the time we have to also realize that if we were listening to values and morals and commandments and good social practices, which is what God wants us to do, there wouldn't be as many problems. I've come from a place in the north and I've been there in a long, long time. I worked in Dublin for most of my 25 years and then I went up to Enniskillen immediately after the bomb when there was a great need for forgiveness. And one of the great leaders of forgiveness that I was very privileged to know and meet was Gordon Wilson. And he was great at that. You know, he said, you don't have a lot of forgiveness. I can't hold bitterness against my enemy, he said, because if I hold bitterness against my enemy, it kills me. It eats away at me. It's like me taking poison and expecting my enemy to die if I hold on to bitterness. And he used to say, we have to leave judgment to somebody else other than us. All we have to do is hold no bitterness against them. That's what his phrase was when his daughter died. I hold no bitterness against those because they will have to meet their maker someday too. And it's up to that maker to judge them. Whatever they believe in, they will be judged on that. And it's not up to me to judge. So why should I spend the rest of my life holding bitterness and a grudge against somebody when it's not my job to forgive?
I suppose too, when we to dig down into it, and we'd question why God might allow something to happen or what have you. I mean, we do have free will, and I suppose maybe part of that would be us not wanting to take responsibility, either individual responsibility, collective responsibility as a nation. You know, at the end of the day, we were given a will, be it by God, if you believe that or otherwise. It's kind of what's happening is our fault. We either make it happen, let it happen, or facilitate it happening, whatever it might be.
Yes, as you put it so well there, Greg, whether we believe in God or not, I do believe in God, and I believe that he gave us free will. But whether you do or don't, you also know that you can make choices no matter what you believe or don't believe in. So that's really the same as free will. And it is the choices that we make that cause that can very frequently cause the troubles in our own life as well, not never mind the troubles in somebody else's life. I think if I were to say something, this is from 47 years writing for the Sun, the World, and 54 years in the priesthood. I would have thought that we were able to forgive a little better long ago,
mm-hmm.
When there was a sort of religion of forgiveness, when there was a belief in forgiveness, when there was a belief that we could go to the sacrament of reconciliation or something other way and ask for forgiveness and receive forgiveness. I think when in a more godless society, I believe there's less forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody makes a mistake and they're never ever forgiven now. And they're never ever forgiven quite often by people who have made a lot of mistakes themselves.
Mm.
And that makes it very hard. Society becomes an unforgiving society. And I think what your earlier panelists were talking about too, the social media is something that there is very little forgiveness in this either.
But I get very confused, Father, in relation to this sometimes in how I feel, because, you know, in terms of social yes. media usage, and particularly the more toxic social medias, very few people in this country actually use them. And then I think sort of the actions of some, we presume that's all of society. And then I'm reminded when someone needs help or there's a tragedy in an area or someone loses someone close to them, then I see what I believe what sometimes I feel we've lost, that it is still there, that the care, the community, the forgiveness, the understanding, it is there, but it seems to be masked by, is it a minority of that we're over-amplifying? I don't know. It confuses me at times.
How I can understand that, and I don't have all the answers to that. When I look at it around, I see infinitely that there is more goodness than there is
yeah.
evil. And it used to be an old principle in journalism. The day that bad news becomes so common that it isn't news is the day you need to worry about. Good news now is so common that it isn't news. That's why we hear about the bad news, because the bad news is, in fact, the more rare thing and therefore the more newsworthy thing. But I think we sometimes have to strike a balance and understand, stand back a little bit and look at it. And I have a great trust in all people, and I've worked in many countries. All people have that one great trust, that if they get an opportunity to stand back a little bit, think, reflect on it, go for a walk, think about it, they will actually come to a very, very good decision. I have great faith in people to actually let the goodness within them, the humanity within them, the right thing within them to come out. But I think people have to be encouraged to do that. That's really what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And when the beginning of that is to forgive yourselves, you don't have to be right all the time. You don't have to be perfect all the time. I mean, one of the big mistakes the church made was actually to pretend it was perfect. And then when we discovered that we were imperfect, we couldn't face up to it and tried to hide it. And that was one of the big mistakes the church made. Actually, if you believe in the Gospels and you listen to the Gospels, Jesus chose 12 people. And out of those 12 people, 4 of them let him down. So, I mean, and one of them, once he let him down and denied him, he made his successor on earth. So I think there's an example to us that, you know, God can handle mistakes. It's up to us to make sure we can handle them as well and forgive ourselves and move on.
Yeah, a caller asks or says, I've often wondered why Father Brian remained within the church, because he appears to be fighting its rules on a constant basis. I'm not sure if you address that directly, but certainly your place within the church and whether or not you wanted to remain within it does form part of your writings in the new book, The Best of Brian, Father.
Yes, yeah, it's a good question that I've had to ask myself many times, and obviously take counseling and take spiritual direction on it. I actually love the Church of the Gospels. I do not actually love the Church of Institution and Laws, because I don't think that's what Christ set up. When I look at the Gospels and read it, I actually see that the few people that Christ couldn't abide were the scribes and the Pharisees, the lawgivers who thought they were better than everybody else, the people who wouldn't lift a finger to help another person. Those were the people that he excoriated, and actually were the people who put him to death eventually. So I think that's a good model for ourselves. We have to be, there's some wonderful things in the institution, the sacrament that I was talking about, the blessings, the courage, the comfort it gives people, the actual ability to find out and forgive and have a fresh start. Our God is a God of second chances, and I think our church should be the same. And when it does that, I'm fully behind it. When it tries to pretend and hide abusers, no, I'm not in favour of that. And that's what I kick against. We should be encouraging people to find God rather than banning them from finding God.
Also, by coincidence, today and this week, we've been talking about the scourge of drugs across society in every element and corner of our country. And that's something that you write more specifically, I think, about cocaine in your book, The Best of Brian.
Yeah,
Of all the topics, why did you want to focus on this one actually first, if you don't mind, Brian?
I wanted to discuss. Well, thank you, Greg, for asking. Why it is because I see the damage that it has, and have spent a lifetime in that. I'm 25 years working in Dublin and in a poor area of Dublin as well, and I saw what the scourge of the drugs, of the common drugs of that time, and I saw that what happened to the people who could sell those drugs and the havoc they wrecked within society, I ran a youth club in Dublin back in the 70s, and I would say out of a youth club of about 60 people, I know that over 30 of them died because of dirty needles and drug abuse. Wow. And I saw it, so I see what had happened. There's nothing glamorous about drug taking. And now I see that there are people in all walks of life, farming, sometimes people in the law themselves, professional people and other people who should have more sense, are allowing themselves to be sucked into a cocaine habit that eventually will destroy at least 30% of them.
Mm. It's so worrying.
I get so upset about it. I had a function the other night quite recently, and the bar manager and myself were having a chat about it, and he had seen that I had written about it and spoken about it in a few times, and he said, you're absolutely right to do that, he said, because somewhere along the line I see people coming into my establishment here and they go straight to the toilet and they're taking a line of cocaine and they're doing that, and my place gets a reputation for being a home for cooking when it's not me at all. Or I said, I want them taking a pint or a drink in moderation, the same as everybody else. But I see people that should know better doing this on a fairly regular basis. And he was just saying, do they realise the possible risks? I'm not saying that everybody who takes cocaine is going to end up a junkie, but I can tell you that a great percentage of them are going to end up a junkie, or if they don't end up a junkie, and this is what a lot of students find out early, they will discover that by taking illegal drugs, they will upset the balance of their own metabolism, and maybe latent schizophrenia or some other mental illness will befall them because of that. Yeah. That's not scaremongering. No. That's actually the facts.
No, and the heart as well. It puts incredible pressure on the heart, which has not an infinite amount of beats. And you do anything that that hinders that, well, we know the consequences of death. So, Father, in writing this book, what it's obviously going to be up to each individual. What do you hope the reader gets from it, or why do you want them to open it? If it's their choice, you know. I know you're not insisting people do, but
no.
In writing something, what's the end game for the reader from your perspective?
Well, the end game for the reader I usually write about what the reader wants to hear about me speaking about. I get an amazing amount of letters and emails from, as you do yourself. As you know, when you put yourself in the public, the people are thankfully not afraid to engage with it. And from the paper, I get a lot of Sunday News, Sunday World, which I'm writing for, as I say, 47 years. I get a great deal of people because they know me. They're reading me from the word children. And I'm a kind of, they're saying to me, are you still alive? You know, a lot of the people. Well, I say, some days I ask myself that.
Check the obituaries at around about 10. And if, yes, exactly. If you're not on them, get up. So,
exactly. And so what I try to do is to give, this is something of short, little stories, poems, little sermonettes, if you want to put it that way, that a person on a bad day can open the book, read it and say, that'll keep me going for this day. And just some little thing to raise their spirits. I was recently went to a wake in Fermanagh, and they were saying a few prayers with the family. And then one of the daughters happened to say, Father Brian, would you have a wee look at the rack above Mammy's bed? Mammy was the deceased person. And I looked at the rack above her head, and she had a row of books that I'd even forgotten I'd written.
Wow.
All in a row above her head. And she said every night she read something from one of those.
Wow.
And she thought it made her day worthy.
Okay.
Now, that to me was just such a lift. Mm. And it was something I wouldn't have thought of. And it's not something I can claim any credit for. It's something that if she put it out there, God will make use of it.
I've got two very brief ones. This one is a little bit random, but I'm going to read it to you because I'd say it's probably born of desperation and great anguish, and you might not have an answer to it. But there was a curse put on my family many years ago, but that person that placed the curse is deceased. It was put on us by a woman who said we'd have no luck or no health as long as we lived. This appears to be happening. Can we do anything to reverse the curse? Have you any words of comfort or advice for that listener?
Yeah, it can happen. I'm not a great believer in the person who can put a curse on you. You know, I think the power of God, and this is, if you read the Gospels again, there are so many instances of people who were possessed by spirits, which is pretty much the same thing as that. And Jesus always commanded the spirits to come out. And I believe that, you know, a fervent belief in the power of God is greater than anything any human can do. And I've a little phrase which I've, when I say people come to me and they ask me those things and they say, this one put a curse on me, this one put a curse on me, or that one will put a curse on me. And I say, what you say to them in such a case, may what you wish for me fall on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that puts an end to
Very finally, Father, can you or do you have a message of hope for our young people in this country this morning? Asks a listener.
I do. I think some of the finest people I've ever met are young people. I spend a lot of time with football clubs and young people and women's clubs and all the rest of it. And they are so dedicated. They are so talented. And the world is their oyster. And I always will say to them, look, remember your family. Remember where you came from. Remember that because you have been gifted with such intelligence and education, you have a duty to make it work for the rest of your life, for the people that you come in contact with. And that is a great vocation. People may not be joining priesthood or anything else, but they have vocation of helping the needy or helping other people. I'm always fascinated when a tragedy comes in an area. You don't have to ask young people what to do. They themselves join in and know exactly what to do. So that is an innate goodness. And if wherever we find goodness, encourage it.
Yeah.
Wherever we find evil, point it out.
I have great faith in our young people. Very finally, if people want to get a copy of your book and also attend a signing, you're in Derry and Letterkenny. Can you remind us, Father, of where you are and when?
Yeah, I'm going right now, going into Veritas in Derry. And most people know that. It's a religious sort of shop, but it's one of the few bookshops around in any place. So I'm going to it now. I've been done the other ones, and I'm going to it now. I'm going there on 11 o'clock today. And I'll be there for about an hour and a half. Then I get into the car and I drive to Veritas and Letterkenny, which I've never been in, but which I believe is a lovely shop. And I'm going to that at probably about, half one, I think it is, I'm there. I'll be half one for an hour and a half, and I'll be there. Tomorrow, I'm in Derrylin in Fenniefermanagh in the morning, and Listenski in the afternoon. Monday, I'm in Easons in Dublin, O'Connell Street, and Tuesday in the afternoon at 1 o'clock, I'm in Mulvey's of Carrick and Shannon. That's all I can remember.
Busy, busy, busy. I think you've done really quite well. Thanks for all of your time this morning, Father. I do appreciate it. Have a lovely day, and well done on the book. And it's lovely for you to get out and meet the people and sign it. Thank you. Father Brian Darcy, his book, if it's a Christmas idea for you, it's called The Best of Brian, and you've heard of opportunities there in both Derry and Letterkenny if you wish to get a copy signed and say hello. Right, Vaughan Presbyterian Church carol service is taking place this coming Sunday at 7:30 p.m. You'll be very welcome to their carol service. There's tea afterwards, and there's a collection for the man's fund as well. So the Vaughan Presbyterian Church is in Tubin, in Burntfoot, in Donegal, of course. Check out vaughanchurch.org for more info there. There's a bazaar on in St Finian's Hall in Convoys tonight at 7:30. I don't know, is it 7 or 7:30? I'm going to go with 7:30. There's a cake sale, bottle stall, tea is available. There'll also be a rickety wheel to spin for prizes. Okay, sounds good. That's the one that goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Right, okay. Now, this is something there's a lot of excitement here at Highland about. It's the Let's Light Up Letterkenny Tour 2023. It's on this Sunday. Bernard Gallagher is the owner of CBM Signs and organiser of Light Up Letterkenny Project. Good morning, Bernard.
Good morning, Greg. How are you getting on?
I'm doing fantastic. So tell us what we can look forward to on Sunday.
Well, third year in a row now, we're going to have the Light Up Letterkenny parade. A mixture of cars, lorries, vans, cars, motorbikes, and a bit of everything. It all started off during COVID and the lockdown. There wasn't much happening at Christmas. We decided to have a wee parade with the Christmas lights to light brighten up Letterkenny, and it's evolved since that. We got asked to do it again and again and again, so it's back by popular demand this year again.
And it is a real spectacle, isn't it? Because the tractor drivers, the lorry drivers, and those in the cars, they really go to town, don't they, to make this extra special.
They do. It was a great sale and battery lights and LED lights turn up to it. The tractor guys put a great effort into it. I suppose the tractors, traditionally, you see them down the country, and we've seen them a couple of years online. But last year, there was more lorries. We had over 30 lorries in attendance last year, and we had about 30 cars as well. And they're all putting on, it's like everything starts, it's getting bigger and better every year, and people's put on more effort, and it's great to see it's great to see something that's the children enjoy it, and indeed the big children enjoy it as well. Their smiles on their faces, and it's something to look forward to, and it's kind of marks Christmas. I think it marks Christmas for everybody. That year COVID and things was closed, there wasn't much happening, so it was nice for everybody to get something to do, and I think everybody remembers that as well.
I think you haven't really seen a Massey Ferguson unless you've seen it with Christmas lights in the wheel rims. You know, I mean, you've arrived then, and big lit up antlers and everything. It's absolutely wonderful. So what's the route, or where can people watch, or where's a good place
It's all for charity, first of all. For charity. The last couple of years were for the hospitals. This year we're bringing Blood Bikes Northwest into it as well. They're doing great work locally, and we're going to give them a bit of the contribution this year. So registration's from 5 o'clock here at CBM Signs in Port Road, just across from the ATU. So the vehicles start gathering from 5 o'clock, and I hope to leave here at 6 o'clock then, and go leave CBM Signs, go towards Tobin's Donegal Oil, up the Port Road, down the main street, around by McDonald's, and out the Blinney Road, through the new Polestar. I don't know how that's going to work with the traffic lights, but she'll have a go at it anyway. Across the front of the Mount Errigal, and then up to yourselves in Highland Radio then for a halfway halt. We everybody regroups up there then at Highland Radio and the Pine Hill Industrial Estate, thanks to the Bowl family for letting us use it every year. And when everybody gets a chance, I think that's what makes it a wee bit different. Everybody gets a chance. When you're on these parades, the same as every parade, when you're actually in the parade, you don't get to see everything because you're only in a certain point. So I think the regroup at the mountaintop helps everybody. Everybody enjoys that and gets to see what everybody else is doing, have a wee chat. And then we'll leave there and we'll come back down the mountaintop, down past the hospital. One of the ideas of passing the hospitals for the children's ward at Christmas, something for them to look forward to, anybody in the hospital, and the children's ward that they could look out and see it all go down past. And then we come back down by the old oat fields and back down to Tobin's and back to CBM Signs again.
It's brilliant. It's going to be fantastic. And yeah. I know that people have seen it. It's a wonderful display. And look, at if you thought there was a lot of lights at the Polestar roundabout, wait till you see it on Sunday. All right. And I know lots of people already have their lorries and the tractors and the cars all done up. Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Bernard, for coming on and helping us spread
thanks
the word.
For all right,
take care
appreciate
yourself. Bye-bye. There's something you want us to mention, by the way. Get in touch with us, 086 60 25,000. Just whilst we're mentioning things, Patrick Rustard McLaughlin has written a biography from when he was 10 years old till today, 80 years later. He's donating the funds from the book to the Friends of Inishowen Hospice in Carn Donagh Hospital. The launch is on Sunday, this coming Sunday, in the GAA Hall, and it is at 7:30 p.m. Greg, it's becoming clearer in many cases we should change the term media to propaganda. Another listener says, I was out for a walk with the dog last night when I observed a Northern Ireland registered taxi pull up at the side of the Cockhill Road in Buncrana, and then watched another fella walk out of a dark laneway, go to the window and pass over what looked like money and received a small package in return. As soon as the transaction took place, the taxi drove off and the other man ran off back up the lane. I'm not one to jump to assumptions, but to me, it looked like a drug deal. Now, what you're being invited to do is maybe note the reg and pass that on to Gardaí if you don't want that happening in your community. But I think people are still a little bit reticent in that regard. Thanks, Highland Radio, for having a more balanced panel. Listening to Brendan Byrne chatting common sense gives me hope. Good morning, Greg. Cannabis has to be legalised. That would help putting people in prison for a plant that actually can help people. It's healthier than tobacco for a person. We live in Ireland, but we're still living in the 1950s. The older generation were terrified by governments and doctors through the decades on the dangers of hemp. Total lies. It was with the intention of the invention of the internet. People's eyes have been opened. You cannot overdose on cannabis. That's one school of thought. There are other schools of thoughts out there as well, of course. I think most of these people who come here have issues with their own government policies. I don't like being compared to them. As I left Donegal at 16, walked up and down every street until I got a job that paid more than £1, half a crown a week, paid my rent and worked. Thank you. That comes in from Mary. This is the easiest country to get drugs into in the world. Drugs washing up on the shore, boats, planes, etc. They need to stop the drugs coming in. And I think you've highlighted the problem, haven't you? We are an island and we don't really police our shores very well. We have an underpowered, underfunded navy. They would be one sort of, you know, one tool in our armory that we don't really have. It's there, but many of the boats are tied up because there's no staff to get them out into the water. It was a news story that the Northwest got a drugs dog. Like, I mean, I remember doing the piece on this program and I was thinking to myself, with all due respect to everyone who campaigned for it and welcomed it, that we were sort of going, yay, we've got one sniffer dog to cover Sligo, Leitrim and Donegal. I mean, you know, is that how serious we're taking these issues? We did, you know, so that's how far behind we are in terms of combating things and what have you. Where I live, there are people that don't do anything for work and are running around in BMWs and other big cars. Where do they get that money? You can figure it out. They're not doing anything. It is impossible to debate in this country, says the listener, even harder when party loyalty comes into it. The real issue is health and housing. I think government is happy for the anti-immigration stance to muddy the waters. That comes in from Dave. That is a school of thought. Just listen to the language of your guests. Their language has been constrained, so now they're not even allowed to speak about the real underlying issues. If you look back through recent history, where these types of authoritarian measures have been implemented, like the EU-run Irish government have been implementing for the past few years, it has always ended in carnage. But maybe that is the goal, says another. Right, OK. Pat Hennigan is Secretary of the Convoy Community Association. Good morning to you, Pat.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, OK. You just wanted to get a bit of a message out there as it relates to the Convoy Community Alert System. What's going on and what do you want to use the time to clarify?
I'm Secretary of the Convoy Community Alert. Text Alert, we're under the groupage now, but it's still all part of Convoy Community Alert. This organisation, as you well and your listeners are aware, the Community Alert is there for the benefit of people in rural communities and to advise them on security and health. Now, I was scrolling through Facebook and I was met with this message, Convoy Community Alert, Facebook page. I opened it out of curiosity. And I was shocked and annoyed to see the amount of anti-immigrant, basically anti-everything, photographs of unidentified men in it. And I went through more. And I want to say, we as the Convoy Security Alert have nothing whatsoever to do with this page. There's photographs of Convoy there. And I'm asking whoever is using that page to stop using it. It's not reflecting the images of anybody in our community. And if they have a grievance or they want to put their own issues forward, let them use some other Facebook.
Right. So you're saying that look, it's you don't feel it's your place to say whether or not they should be doing it, but try and use a different name. That the Convoy Community Alert Facebook page has been long established as what we would know traditionally as a community alert function, and you're asking them to change the name to avoid any confusion and potentially, I suppose, stop the Convoy Community Alert messaging getting out. So let's say, for instance, someone doesn't like the anti-immigrant postings that you say are there. They could end up blocking the wrong page and not getting the type of community information that you're putting out there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, when we the text alert was initiated and brought into the Convoy Community Alert about 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
We went around the country, volunteers around the country, to canvass and to get contributions from people to pay for the text alert. Now, I don't know what these people will be thinking now. Have we changed our tact or whatever it is? But I can certainly reassure them, we have nothing to do with it. And we will just have to see where it's going from here if that page is not removed.
Okay, right, there you have it. All right, thank you very much indeed, Pat. Take care of yourself, okay? That's Pat there. More of your comments here. The government don't want a debate on immigration. We need to discuss and let those who have concerns have their fears allayed. I think that would be useful. Michael is wrong about hitching homelessness and healthcare to immigration. Young people are competing with immigrants for housing, work, social healthcare, and these are the people that the far right are exploiting. That's why we need debate, but government will fail us again, as they do in most areas. That's according to Martin there. Trying to hide the real issue of most Irish people on the subject of immigration by dressing it up in flowery wrapping paper to hide what's really in the box. Equality is an aspiration. That sounds good. But, and there is a big but. Another, why not bring men in during the day instead of 12 a.m. to 3 a.m. so that the community can see them? If these men are all okay, why do they come in at night? It's not their choice, of course. The comment in the door was exactly the type of response that exacerbates the already tense situation and actually sows the seed of causing what will be perceived as racist views. The government is handling this situation badly. What about the unvetted women? How can we be vetted when you have escaped a war or genocide? Were those who escaped the famine vetted, or who escaped due to economic situation here to the UK? But the truth is, pretty much every house in Ireland has unvetted males in them as well. But anyway, it is just phraseology that's used on a more regular basis. OK, listen, that's it for now. We're going to take a break. We're going to take the news and we're going to chill. Because Michael and Katie are going to be joining us just for a chit-chat, chin-wag, ease us into the weekend, all that jazz. Stay tuned for that, because it is really quite fun and it's something a little bit different.